I've met quite a few of you before, but not everyone. My name's Kokyo from Santa Cruz Zen Center, Gyokuronji, down the road. So sweet to come up to the hills of Jikoji on a beautiful fall day. The stillness permeates this place. Feeling of practice and living in nature. So this year at Santa Cruz Zen Center, we've had a kind of Dharma theme. The year's almost over, so we've been exploring for a while now mirror awareness. The way our mind is like a mirror. It's a classic Zen metaphor. And also before Zen, it showed up in Indian Buddhist texts. The mind as a mirror. And it's just a metaphor, but as far as metaphors go, I think it's pretty good. I may have even talked about this before. Can't remember. Does anyone remember? Because maybe I haven't been up here 2013. I'm not sure.
Maybe so in the spring.
Maybe in the spring. Yeah, we've been looking at this mirror for a while. The mirror that is the nature of our mind in this metaphor is like completely receptive. It whatever's placed before a mirror, the mirror just receives it without preferring some reflection over some other reflection. You could say the mirror does maybe discriminate in a certain way, because if blue comes, it reflects blue, and if red comes, it reflects red. It doesn't alter whatever's happening. It doesn't edit whatever's happening. It just, whatever comes to our experience, this mirror-like nature of our mind just receives it without adding or subtracting anything. And also, a mirror, when you put an object in front of a mirror and the reflection appears on the surface, the mirror doesn't like try to stick to that image, and the image doesn't stick to the mirror. So that's another way this metaphor plays out very nicely, I think, is that our mind receives, for example, right now, the experience of all of us in this room and what we're doing here. Here's the experience. The mind doesn't, the mirror-like nature of the mind doesn't kind of grasp onto that image and say, let's make it last a little longer. Or a little shorter, or move some people over here and over there, and tune the colors up or down or something like that. It's just it doesn't grasp or reject the images. Like if there's a really ugly image or a painful image, the mirror doesn't say, let's skip that one. Let's have another one instead. It doesn't reject the reflections on its surface. It doesn't grasp the reflections on its surface. It doesn't prefer some reflections to other reflections. And yet, it holds them completely without, in all their great detail and variety. So, with the mirror metaphor, it's like visual images. And I think it's a nice way to kind of warm up to seeing this mirror. Exploring this mirror is like you can imagine, as if your awareness right now is like a big round, boundless, unlocatable mirror, and all of this that we see is just like on the surface of our mirror. So that's visual, but this kind of Buddha mirror that we're talking about, it doesn't just reflect visual images, also sounds. So there could be unpleasant sounds or pleasant sounds. It receives them all. Also smells, tastes, physical sensations, and thoughts, ideas, emotions. It's this kind of mirror that receives all of that in the same way, without grasping or rejecting. So ways to practice with this are like you could, when you're walking, you know, you can do it in the Zendo, but walking along the street, you can kind of imagine as if you are this mirror, and this mirror actually doesn't like come and go, and it doesn't ever move. So you could say your mirror is like beginningless, endless, timeless, unmoving, unchanging reflectivity, and the scene of the road coming towards you is the images. That's what's moving. You know, you're still, and all the scenery of your life is just the images coming and going on the surface of the mirror. So sometimes it's maybe not so difficult to warm up to that and practice with the mirror in this way, and sometimes it's quite difficult, even when we remember. So today I had the experience, and I seem to have some kind of like karmic situation with getting to Jikoji. I remember one other talk here, I was like, I got lost. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
It was some kind of like...
It was Shoho, I think.
Yeah, the road was blocked. So there was a detour around in Boulder Creek, I think. And there were signs that sent the detour around, but somehow the signs didn't go all the way back to Highway 9. And so we got way off on some like out near Big Basin or something before we realized, wait, this doesn't look like Highway 9 anymore. And then all the anxiety that comes up around that. So this morning, so looking forward to coming up and sitting the two periods with y'all, and a couple people very kindly offered rides up here, and I see Rain's here from Santa Cruz too, I maybe could have come, but I turned them all down because I had a rental car. The car that I had at home died recently. So I thought I'd visit a friend on Skyline. So that's why I turned down these very kind ride offers. So I can stay later and visit this friend. And also, I'm one of those kind of like uncivilized kind of barbarians who just lived in these monasteries for too many years. So I still, even though I've been out I've been released for a while, I still, you know, don't quite know how all the world works. Like, I don't have a cell phone, and I realized I don't think I've ever rented a car before in my life. It's kind of unusual, maybe. So I thought this is part of why I thought wanted to do it is like, let's see what that's like. Test it out in Santa Cruz. So I had my reservation from like weeks ago, and I go down there to pick up the car, and their computer system is down. And there's this huge line. I thought I would just pick up the car and come right up. So it was over an hour and a half, like just waiting there. You know, the first half hour, I thought, oh, it'll be okay. I can wait like 20 minutes, and then, okay, half an hour. You know, no one quite knew, and everybody's getting kind of antsy, and they're, you know, using credit cards with paper on it, rubbing some kind of metal plate to get credit card numbers and stuff. And they were totally unprepared for no computers at a place like that. So I'm like, well, maybe I'll miss the first period of Zazen. I'll just do, but as I often tell people, you know, waiting is a great opportunity for Zazen. You know, if you're a Zen practitioner, when you're waiting in line at a supermarket or something, there's no such thing as waiting for a practitioner, right? We just, you make it Zazen. But I was having trouble doing this. Probably because, like, the energy in the place, like, everyone was kind of stressed, and the people were really just, like, looked like they didn't know what they were doing, but they weren't trying to be, like, efficient either. I think they were, like, kind of worried too, and kind of slow, and they kept going into the back. All the people at the counter would just disappear into the back, and I think they were like, what should we do? I'm like, is this a professional business? All kinds of thoughts, you know. And I'm like, this is very humbling. I'm not really able to just treat this waiting as Zazen. And then, of course, the mirror. We have the mirror that just receives this situation. And I find it again and again with playing with this mirror that there's the, you know, if you're pretty relaxed and settled, like in Zazen or something, you can take in more of the subtlety of the visual, auditory, and tactile experience and really just receive it like this as a practice to not grasping or rejecting. But when there's emotional difficulty, it's like another layer down. It's harder, I find. So I find, okay, I take in the scene, but actually the dominant thing here is that I'm getting more and more anxious. And I'm like, I'm not relaxed. some other people there were kind of like, seemed to be taking it pretty well. They're like, you know, they're just having some conversation with others, you know. Everybody's got a plan if they're renting a car. They got a plan for the day that's being changed. But I'm like, well, I'm giving this talk, you know. It's kind of like, it wouldn't be so good to just not make it. And then on top of it, I don't have anybody's phone number or a cell phone. And finally, somebody loaned me a cell phone. I'm trying to get through from... I'm like, what county is Jikoji? San Mateo, yeah?
No, we're Santa Cruz.
Oh, it's Santa Cruz?
Yeah.
Okay, so that was part of the problem.
But the number's not, you know, the prefix is not the same as...
What's
Santa Cruz?
But, you know, 4831.
Yeah, we're 408.
You know, so on information, they ask for the county first. And they're like, no, there's no Jikoji. It's San Mateo. So all of this is going on, and I did leave messages on all the various numbers, but nobody answered them. I'm like, oh, there's still, maybe they won't check. So how to, like, be a mirror when all that's happening, right? You know, first it's just the disappointment of, oh, it'd be so nice to just have a couple periods of Zazen with you all. I'm like, okay, well, that's not going to happen. But now it's like, we really should make it to this talk. I couldn't explain to the people that yeah, I made it with like maybe a minute and a half actually to spare. Even I won't tell you how fast I was driving.
And Highway 17 was sort of down to one lane today.
Oh well, luckily I came up 9.
Oh good.
So I think there's, as a practice thing, I've noticed this before too, is like with this mirror awareness that there's the basic sensory realm and even kind of thought realm, and the thoughts are pretty settled. You can reflect that. But when it gets into this, like, this bodily tension from sort of anxiety about time, in this case, it's like then... the mirror reflection practice seems to be like, can I receive this feeling of tension and anxiety, and feeling like not practicing very well with the mirror, and all of that, all that experience? Can I receive all that in the mirror? Right? So, you see, it's like almost like a level down, right? Receive that, which means not necessarily that it goes away, right? It's like, but here it is. It's basically, this is another way of saying, just completely experience whatever we're experiencing, which we've heard these kind of Zen teachings probably a lot. Just be with whatever's happening. I think mirror awareness is another way of saying that. And there's some kind of, maybe we don't even feel the ease of the mirror, but we can trust on some level that there is this mirror in the middle of this kind of anxiety and disappointment and resistance to what's happening. There is this mirror in the background that's just like completely equanimous. You know, I'm not equanimous, but this nature of mine is actually just receiving the whole, mess. So in that way, the practice is always available. And is it helpful? If we can't really, if it doesn't really relax us or whatever, is it still helpful? I think on some level it is. We trust that there's something bigger than this, even in the midst of the surface problems. There's something in the background that's just like fine. This is totally okay with everything, with coming and going, with birth and death, with pain and pleasure. That basic okayness is the way the mirror is. Some people might have heard of the two truths in Buddha's Dharma, the ultimate truth of emptiness, where nothing's arising and ceasing, as the Heart Sutra speaks of, no coming, no going, no rising, no ceasing, no birth and death, and then the conventional truth of the appearances of eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and arising and ceasing, and all of this. And that those two are always inseparable, these two truths. You can't have like an ultimate truth without a conventional, and vice versa. So I think the mirror is a nice image for that too, that the mirror itself is like the ultimate truth that never changes. The images never actually touch the surface of the mirror. They never affect this empty clarity that's the surface of the mirror. And the images that are like the appearances coming and going on the surface of the mirror, they don't quite touch it, but they're not the least bit separate from it either, right? The images in the mirror are like always inseparable, and yet they're inseparable, but they don't actually touch, right? Because the images are just images. Reflections don't touch a mirror. So I think it's quite a beautiful way of thinking about this Buddhist teaching of the two truths. The conventional and the ultimate truth are not exactly the same, but they're also completely inseparable. So what we're studying now is an essay by Dogen Zenji, one of our favorite ancestors, called The Ancient Mirror. The Ancient Mirror. And it's about this mirror awareness. And with many stories, many Zen stories about mirrors. Dogen often does this. He'll pick a topic like the mirror, and he finds like five or six old Chinese stories about mirrors. There's a lot of them, he found. So I'll just bring up this one that's at the end here. Maybe you've heard this story. It's one of the classic Zen stories about a mirror. Yeah. Dogen says, Matsu of Jianxi practiced with Nanyue, who intimately transmitted the mind seal to him. This was the beginning of polishing a tile. This is the polishing a tile story. Living in the Chuan Fa Temple, Matsu was engaged in the continuous practice of zazen for over a decade. Ponder his sitting on a rainy night in a thatched roof hut. Dogen says, always sitting zazen, this Matsu. One day, Nanyue, his teacher, visited his hut and said, what have you been doing these days? Matsu said, I've been just sitting. That's what he did. Dogen maybe like shifts the original a little bit. Dogen says, literally, I've been just sitting. I've been practicing Shikan Taza. Means just wholeheartedly sitting. Nanyue said, what's your intention in just sitting? Matsu said, I intend to become a Buddha. Then Nanyue picked up a tile and started polishing it on a stone, an old roof tile, you know, glazed roof tile from the temple roof, fallen on the ground. He picked it up, started rubbing the tile on a stone. And Matsu said, Master, what are you doing? Nanyue said, I'm polishing a tile. Matsu said, why are you polishing a tile? Nanyue said, I'm trying to make a mirror. Matsu said, how can you polish a tile and make a mirror? And Nanyue said, how can you do zazen and make a Buddha? So, classic Zen story about our style of zazen. The zazen that's like this kind of effortful activity to eventually make a Buddha in the future is being critiqued by the Zen ancestors in a way that that's like taking this rough piece of stone, rubbing it on another stone. How long will that take to make that tile like a smooth reflective surface to receive everything equanimously like a mirror? Maybe a long time, maybe impossible, right? So that's what that image is about. I'm polishing this tile to make a mirror. Well, how can you make a mirror by polishing a tile on a rock? How can you make a Buddha by sitting there day after day in zazen? It's not a matter of this long effort towards some goal in the future, in other words, right? This is the southern school of Zen. So Dogen doesn't quote the rest of the story. The story goes on with Amatsu saying something like, well then, how do we practice? And his teacher says, well, if you're riding in a cart and the cart doesn't move, do you prod the cart or do you prod the horse that carries the cart? Kind of implying that some people say that the horse is like the true mind, the true understanding, the awakened mind, and the cart is like the form of sitting practice or so on. So you're emphasizing, you're prodding along this cart that's like just the form of sitting, but that's not what's going to get the cart to move to Buddhahood. You need to like look at the source that's driving it, that's pulling the cart, the source of mind, and address that instead. In other words, try to see how there's already a Buddha sitting here. It's not going to be made through your gradual effort. So now Dogen says, people have been interpreting this great story for hundreds of years. Now we might say thousands of years in America, as Nanyue's encouragement to matsu. But it's not necessarily so. The activity of a great sage is far beyond ordinary understanding. So I think Dogen's saying, it sounds like Nanyue is kind of critiquing Matsu's zazen practice, and saying, you're not really going to make a Buddha by sitting zazen over a long time with this effort towards something in the future. Just like I'm not really going to make a mirror by polishing this tile. But Dogen says, not necessarily so. Let's look deeper, as Dogen often says. Dogen says, without polishing a tile, how can a great sage have the skillful means to make a true person? The capacity of making a true person is the bones and marrow of the Buddhas and ancestors. Although it is fabricated, somewhat contrived means, it is a common tool of the house of Buddha to polish a tile. Without common everyday tools, then Nanyue's teaching could not have been transmitted in the Buddha house. From this we know that the work authentically transmitted by the Buddhas and ancestors is no other than directly pointing. So Dogen's saying, actually this demonstration of polishing a tile is not to say that this is a ridiculous, fruitful task, but actually this is a skillful means. There is some practice of polishing a tile. Now is where Dogen really points it out when he says, indeed, at the moment that polishing a tile becomes a mirror, matsu becomes a Buddha. So I understand this as Dogen really emphasizes practice. You could say this original story about polishing the tile is emphasizing that you can do whatever practices and make whatever effort you want, but your Buddha nature is already perfectly complete. It doesn't depend on any practice. I think that's the gist of the original story. And Dogen is not disagreeing with that, but Dogen likes to emphasize wholehearted engagement in practice. So Dogen's saying, in the act of polishing a tile, it's not so much that you're polishing a tile to make a future mirror, but that the very act of polishing a tile is manifesting the mirror like nature of the tile. Can you follow that? Mm-hmm. It's like the tile already actually is kind of like a mirror, just like us. And in the act of polishing, the wholehearted engagement in polishing, which would be like sitting zazen or other practices, in that activity, the mirror is right there. It's not so much polishing a tile to make a future mirror, but the polishing itself reveals the mirror in the moment of polishing. So again, Dogen says, indeed, at the moment, at the very time that the polishing of the tile becomes or manifests a mirror, matsu becomes a Buddha. So in matsu's moment of zazen practice, which is kind of like polishing a tile, his wholehearted engagement in sitting zazen upright with breathing deeply, letting go of past and future, in that effort, there's Buddha. At the moment matsu becomes a Buddha, matsu immediately becomes matsu. Mm-hmm. At the moment matsu becomes matsu, zazen immediately becomes zazen. So this is a great little piece of Dogen here. And Suzuki Roshi, founder of San Francisco Zen Center, liked this story also. And I think he used this story to come up with one of his classic phrases of, he says, like, just to be yourself is how you practice zazen. Or just sitting is sometimes Suzuki Roshi would say, what's the practice of just sitting? It's to be yourself completely. I have the intuition that he's pulling that from this essay, from this part of this essay. So at the moment of the polishing a tile reveals a mirror, Matsu becomes a Buddha, is revealed to be a Buddha. At the moment Matsu becomes a Buddha, Matsu becomes Matsu, and saying you become you. At the moment of your wholehearted effort of zazen, there's completion. And you become you. At the moment you become you, zazen becomes zazen. You could say, like,
and a tree becomes a tree.
And a tree becomes a tree. And everything becomes what it is, yeah. Everything is just what it is. But then when we're talking about zazen practice in particular, you could say, zazen truly becomes zazen. At the moment that we're just ourselves, we're not, which means also that we're actually being like a mirror, right? We're not grasping or rejecting our experience. We're not thinking, I wish I was a little bit clearer or smarter or stupider or more comfortable or more concentrated or more relaxed or less of all that stuff. You know, we're just like, no, just this person exactly as I am, as you are, settling the self on the self, we sometimes say, is when zazen becomes zazen. It's like, that's zazen. You might think, this can't be zazen, because it's not concentrated or relaxed or anything. But if there's not the slightest bit of, like, of resistance to what's happening or trying to change something, then there is. We're just settled into who we are. Thus polishing a tile to make a mirror has been maintained as the bones and marrow of the ancient Buddhas. So this kind of what was originally a criticism of polishing a tile to make a mirror as a ridiculous, fruitless thing, Dogen says, polishing a tile to make a mirror has been maintained as the bones and marrow of the ancient Buddhas. This being so, there is an ancient mirror made of tile. You could say, there's an ancient Buddha made of this person. Although this mirror is polished, it's never been undefiled. It's not that the tile is dirty, it's just that a tile that is a tile is polished as a tile. To actualize or manifest the merit of making a mirror in this way is the endeavor or the wholehearted practice of Buddhas and ancestors. Nanyue's expression about polishing the tile, however, is an expression of expressions. Thus, polishing a tile is making a mirror. Those of you nowadays should also try to polish the tile of the present to make a mirror. It will certainly be a mirror. Or we might say, it certainly is a mirror. So, could you follow that story? This is typical Dogen. It takes a little effort. It takes a little polishing effort to even try to understand what he's talking about. He makes us work a little bit. But the point that he's talking about is very simple. If you can't understand all the ramblings of his words, the point is just to let yourself be yourself completely. And at that moment, there's nothing lacking or extra, and we are like a mirror. You have any questions or comments? Yes.
I wanted to welcome you to modernity.
Thank you. It's a little rough sometimes, yeah. Modernity.
You're not alone. And just seems a lot to keep coming up with the product and process. To kind of boil it into a nutshell. With the
In this understanding of Zen practice, the product is not different from the process. They're not separate. So yeah, product and process are not two. Or as one of Dogen's most well-known trademark sayings, kind of defining his teaching, I would say, is practice and realization are not two. Some say that's one of the kind of mottos of the Soto school of Zen. Practice and realization are not two, meaning in earlier understandings, there's practice that leads up to some future realization at a particular point. But Dogen says a moment of wholehearted practice is a moment of realization, or literally verification of the mirror. So in the wholehearted engagement with the present activity, there at that moment there's a verification of Buddha. So it's not some future thing. So that's like the process and the product are not two. And I think that's true. That's what this story's about. Or the path and the goal are not separate. Even though it also looks like there's maybe we evolve in our practice and understanding. From one perspective, that it appears that way, like reflections on the surface of the mirror appear like that. But meanwhile, each moment from the very beginning is complete in itself.
The mirror polishing reminds me of the Huineng Sixth Patriarch incident, where he says the body is not a Bodhi tree, the mind is not a mirror, right?
Yes.
There's no stand, etc.
Mm-hmm. Dogen quotes that story too in this essay.
And Suzuki Roshi said something like, when we sit, there's nothing, we are nothing.
Mm.
We do not even recognize or realize what we are.
Mm.
When we get up, then we recreate.
Yeah, yeah. Like don't know mind. Or is like the mirror. I think there's all these different, you know, ways of talking about the mirror. But yeah, the mind that's we forgot who we are for the moment, and we're just so settled into what's happening. And sometimes it may be like that, and then we get up and we remember. Sometimes it may be that we can't forget who we are, and we can't forget all the things we have to do later today, and we can't just settle into the present, and we might even be annoyed by that. And that's when can we take that whole experience that maybe not the one we would choose, and reflect that whole thing on the surface of the mirror. And then there's a whole different relationship to it. It's kind of like, this is just the image. Another mirror story Dogen mentions is one of the ancestors says, I have this ancient mirror. When a native person comes, a native person appears. When a foreigner comes, a foreigner appears. So when a really settled present experience appears, that but when that comes, that appears. When a really disturbed experience comes, a disturbed experience appears. And then the urge doesn't mind.
I have to correct what I said. I think that what I saw was that it's not, there's no mirror, it's that the mirror has no stand.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's true. And the mirror has no stand. And Bodhi has no tree. Yeah. Dogen does a little comment on that, because that's one of the classic mirror stories. That was maybe the first Zen mirror story. So, it's a good one.
There's also one about the mirror being broken.
Yes, yeah.
Raven, mm-hmm.
You
say.
Yep. Yeah, there's a few about mirrors being broken. And then I'll just end, because that was the gong was just reflected in the mirror, the gong sound for lunch. The story of one of Suzuki Roshi's teachers was Kishizawa Ion, and he practiced with Nishiari Bokusan, who was a great turn of the century, or 1800s, Soto Zen reviver in Japan. And so this is sort of like an oral story of Suzuki Roshi's teachers that's been passed along, that something like that Kishizawa Ion is sitting there in Dokusan, something like that, and they're listening to the rain on the temple roof, and he says, so what's the place where the sound of the rain on the temple roof, the sound of the water running through the gutters, and the sound of the bell, the temple bell, ringing in the distance, what's the place where all those sounds meet? Great kind of question, like really like in the present moment here, what's the place where they meet? And we might say from this discussion, we might say they all meet in the same moment on the surface of the mirror. But his teacher said, bring me the mirror and I'll smash it for you. So kind of like, we're looking for this very cool, nice, it's a very beautiful, settled image, right, of like the rain and the darkness making this peaceful sound, like all on the mirror. But instead of it saying they all meet on the mirror, he says, bring me the mirror, your mirror where maybe you think that it might meet, and I'll smash it, meaning any idea of this this cool, boundless, calm unity of mirror is
cut through that.
Yeah, cut through. If we're holding a little bit too, you can't really hold on to the mirror, but if there's the slightest attempt to, smash the whole thing, and then there's just this. There's all this and all its beautiful messiness. And then Kishizawa Ion said, I don't understand. What's that mean? Bring me the mirror and I'll smash it. And his teacher said, true eternity still flows, which is a line from the song of the jewel mirror samadhi. So true eternity still flows, where we might say as the true eternal beginningless endless mirror actually is not just still and unmoving. It flows. True eternity still flows could be like the boundless, timeless mirror is shattered into billions of broken pieces, each one reflecting its own little bit.
So it's not just one point of view.
It's not just one point of view, and it's not so kind of clear and cool necessarily. Could be like a big mess, and that's the way the mirror appears. Dogen gets much more into this, the mirror shattering thing. He comments on extensively in here. So that's some stories about rental car agencies and